People ask me, you think you're an expert on politics? And I say, yes, I am. And you know why? Because my people invented it, all right? Thousands and thousands of years ago in Athens, groups of citizens, I know that'll upset people, but only citizens could vote, gathered together, and they would vote on what they wanted. They'd put their black pebble in the box or the white pebble in the box, and they would vote. It was true democracy. And as such, they went bankrupt. There was corruption. State went bankrupt. And you know what happened? Alexander the Great came in and kicked their butt. Destroyed, kicked their butt and created a new dynamic. We're not there yet. We're still in the democracy phase, although we are really a republic. Our founding fathers understood that. And they also understood that people had to have elections where we decide what we're going to do, what we want, what kind of country we want, what kind of city and state we want. And people are voting, will vote on Tuesday. The aftermath should be intense. Whoever loses will cry, and they won't believe that they lost, but they did. Talking about this with us, we're going to have Dan Proft. Yeah, Dan Proft, the conservative radio host at WIND and also a friend of ours. And there's Jeff Carlin here with me, my buddy as always. He's still studying the wine sommelier scandal. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist at the Chicago Tribune, Mutza lover, and the lover of free expression and democracy and a republic. And you know where you are? You're stuck between big J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner and Mike Madigan. He's staring at you from across the corner in the dark. It's that boulevard of broken dreams. We call it the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
What happens when democracy goes crazy? Well, I know my people did this. They voted themselves into financial oblivion, and Alexander the Great came in and destroyed them all, took over, and attacked, eventually controlled the world, attacked India, and brought us Vindaloo. Dan Proft, what's up, man?
Yeah, that story is appropriate of any particular Midwestern state, or
with the satrap. The satrap, Michael Madigan, standing by. Jeff, Dan Proft, what's going to happen on Tuesday?
Well, look, I think that, are you talking about like specific races or just kind of in general in Illinois?
Let's go general first in Illinois because all politics is local.
Well, so start at the top. I've said this for the better part of a year and a half. After Bruce Rauner destroyed himself by betraying the conservative base of the party by going back on his word to the Republican caucuses in the General Assembly on a number of issues that he was going to lose. And so Bruce Rauner loses going away. It won't be close. He takes the rest of the statewide ticket with him.
Even Eric Herold?
Yes. Gone.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens at the legislative level. I think Republicans would be very lucky to pick up a few seats because we have some really good candidates in races in districts that should have never been held by Democrats, but probably more reasonably likely to hold serve and stop Madigan from regaining his supermajority. So you'd have a Pritzker, a Madigan supermajority in the House, and a Cullerton supermajority in the Senate.
Pritzker has never had a job, has he, Jeff Carlin?
Not that I know of.
He was born on third base, this fat boy.
And raised by a single mom, John.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. With billions. Raised by the butler.
All he's done his entire life, is create jobs and remove toilets. That's all he's done.
That toilet thing really frosts my butt. You guys?
Look, it's a property tax fraud. Does that upset you in a state with the highest property taxes in the nation, where when you have people that are connected like him or all of Mike Madigan's clients or all of Robert Martwick's clients, that and their relief is on your back?
And Burke's
clients, their relief is on your back? Yeah, I think it should be upsetting. I think that actually that's a good example of an issue that Rahner failed to capitalize on. I don't think part of the thing with Rahner, this just goes beyond the issues. I don't think he's run a particularly good campaign, particularly focused campaign message-wise, where J.B. Pritzker has. 4 years of failure is enough. Pound it, pound it, pound it. Give examples, different examples to support it. What Rahner has done is alternatively say J.B. Pritzker is going to be on the end of Mike Madigan's puppet strings, or J.B. Pritzker is a puppet master. Try wheeling and dealing with Blagojevich, orchestrating property tax fraud. So which is he? Is he a puppet master? Is he a manipulator or the manipulated? And he never really settled on which one it is, and I think it muddles the message. Is he a stooge or is he another ruling class crime family member?
George Smiley would love someone like J.B. Pritzker. People who think that they're manipulating are often the easiest puppets to use, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, his money has made a big difference on down the line in this cycle. But Mike Madigan's raised a ton of money on his own, too. I mean,
and gets a ton of money from the unions.
And trial lawyers. Not enough is said about the trialers. I mean, you're talking about he's gotten 15 law firms in this state, 12 plaintiff's attorneys, 3 asbestos litigators, are responsible for about 40-45% of the total money Madigan's raised, the $16 million he's poured into state legislative races. It's real money, real power. That's the constituency. Public sector unions, largely the trades, I'm sad to say, that have folded totally in with Madigan this cycle, because of Rahner's inability to distinguish the trades from the public sector unions. And the trial lawyers.
Janice. He was unable to...
In part. Not totally, but in part.
He was unable to separate carpenters, pipe fitters, plumbers from his attack on the public service unions. And I think rightfully so. I think the relationship between the public unions and politics, even as Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who imprisoned thousands of Japanese, said, right? Roosevelt was also concerned about the public sector.
He opposed public sector unionization. So did George Meany, the founder of the FL-CIO, co-founder.
Right.
I mean, so there's a reason, because it's not the same dynamic as in the private sector with the trades, where you have adversarial bargaining. You have labor on one side and management on the other side. In this state, as we've seen, the public sector unions, generally speaking, outside of police and fire, you really have the labor on both sides. Labor finances the management that they then pretend to negotiate with. And so you wonder why you get blank check deals.
And why we're bankrupt. I just ran into a firefighter, because right near WGN, there's a engine company. We were talking about the great chefs of the fire department. There are some. And after the election, after he retires in a few years, he's going to go. But he wonders how long will that pension last for him.
And well,
that's a concern for all of these public employees.
They should be concerned, because the math knows no party affiliation.
Right.
And the math doesn't care about your feelings. And what we've tried to talk about on my show and with the Illinois Policy Institute, with our candidates that I've supported through my independent expenditure PAC, is the math. I mean, the demagoguery of the left, I would hope, becomes tiresome at some point, because it's a cul-de-sac. It doesn't go anywhere. So you're either interested in trying to address these math problems that we've imposed upon ourselves, as you sort of intimated at the outset of your show.
Black pebble, white pebble.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's you're either a solutionist or you're a Chicago Democrat or you're a combine Republican. Those are your three choices. I don't want to be a combine Republican, and I don't want to be a Chicago Democrat crime family toady. I want to be a solutionist, and so that's why we tried to talk about property taxes and what could happen. Look at other states that have a working model where you don't steal people's home equity to borrow against to try to pay off the promises you made, borrowing against tomorrow to pay for yesterday, and pension reform that's prospective, and creating a more hospitable business climate so you don't have productive people fleeing this state like it's on fire. So if you don't want to have those conversations, then, you know, continue to vote for the same people, get the Madigan that you pretend not to want in charge of the state, and people will continue to leave, and this state will continue to decay. And it's a sad story, but it's the choice before us, and it's the choice before the electorate on Tuesday.
Here's something I always wanted to ask you, and I've been hitting it for 20 years. You've been hitting it for almost that length of time, but I don't think the electorate really got it. I think it's because many in my business don't want to make the connection for them. But why can't they get that a vote for a Democrat is a vote for Mike Madigan? If you vote Democratic state rep, you're really not voting for that state rep. You're voting for Mike Madigan to continue. And people say, I really don't like this boss Mike Madigan, he's evil. But then they vote for their, you know, Nussman, or they vote for their, you know, state rep that they think is nice. Why haven't they been able to make that connection?
Well, one is what you said, that your brethren, including at the Tribune, muddy the waters. When you endorse suburban Democrats that are Madigan roll call votes, you confuse people. Well, if the Tribune is endorsing, you know, my local Madigan roll call vote, then, you know, maybe she or he is okay and not part of the problem. So that's part of it. The other part of it is the Republican Party is terrible at developing a brand and engaging people in a long-running, open-ended dialogue, as opposed to waiting for Labor Day to come and then recycling the warmed-over talking points that we've been recycling for the better part of 25 years, and then trying to out-boogeyman politics the left. It doesn't work.
All right, give some examples.
Well, I mean, it's just what's the examples are in your mailbox on your TV screen. The ads being run by Rahner to some extent, by House Republicans to a lesser extent, Senate Republicans, they don't have the money. It's just all the same pablum. I mean, it's the same pablum from the left too, the same incendiary, baseless attacks, the purposely imposing federal issues on state legislative races. Ken Idstein in Gray's Lake is going to take away your Medicare. Ken Idstein's right. Running for state rep. It's disingenuous. It shouldn't even be allowed to be on the air because it's so specious. But so that's what the left does. But what does the Republican Party come back with? We're for less taxes, less spending, smaller government, and we're not Mike Madigan. I mean, basically, the Republican Party's entire definition is in the negative. What we're not. Well, the electorate judges you on what you are. And the what we are has not been particularly clearly defined by the establishment surrender Republicans who've lorded over the party for as long as I've been on the planet. Bob Kustra.
Oh, my God. Do you know about this, Jeff?
Bob Kustra.
I don't know.
Jim Edgar's lieutenant governor. The last good governor we had, Jim Edgar. What a lie that is. And that's a lie Republicans tell themselves.
Is that the Jim Edgar who rode in on that white horse, the front of which was Bob Schillander and the back end was Bill Cellini?
Yeah, the same Jim Edgar. Horse, the same, right? Jim Edgar who inked the pension ramp deal that exacerbated the unfunded pension liabilities problem, the same Jim Edgar who raised taxes, the same Jim Edgar who stunted the turning of the page of the Republican Party in the late 90s to the early 2000s by, you know, wanting to be wooed every time a statewide office came up, like, oh, maybe I'll get back in. And so he completely shut off the development of new talent. That Jim Edgar, who, by the way, is a volunteer for the J.B. Pritzker campaign. The last great Republican governor we had, voluntary for the J.B. Pritzker campaign.
He won't endorse Rahner.
Well, that's not endorsing Rahner, depending on the reason, is one thing. Volunteering for Spalding?
How so?
Doing debate prep for that guy?
Wait, I missed this. He did?
Yeah.
He stood in. Wait, Jeff, did you know this?
No, I didn't.
There were reports that he was helping Spalding do debate prep, saying you'll get nothing and like it, and so forth, and seeing how Spalding would respond. But There's what he's doing. And then his lieutenant governor, from Bob Custer, who fled long ago for a sinecure as the president of Boise State University, sends an op-ed, a letter to the editor into the Daily Herald from Boise, endorsing Sean Casten against Peter Roskam for Congress. Sean Casten, who he calls, you know, he'll be for bipartisan, common sense, reasonable solutions. This is Sean Casten who compared Trump to Osama bin Laden. This is Sean Casten whose ideological North Star is the hysteric who is Dan Savage, who calls for mandatory abortion, who calls for Republicans to be murdered.
This is the Sean Casten
is disqualified from any position because of how absurd he is, the statements he made. And he's being endorsed by one of our illustrious former Republican elected officials, Bob Custer, part of the Jim Edgar team.
Why doesn't George Ryan come out and endorse somebody? Is George still alive? Did he die?
He's alive,
yeah. Because that's the crew that he's with.
Why does he run again? He can be our Republican nominee in 22.
And things will get done. And people will work together.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Bipartisanship. I mean, so here's the thing about Custer, though. They've been lying to you for 30 years. I mean, with all of my criticism of Rahner, which is well-founded, it didn't start with Rahner, as you know. This has been the Republican Party for my entire adulthood. And unfortunately, you still have a lot of Republicans who are complicit in it because they benefit financially or ignorant. And so it continues. It takes forever to turn the page and get rid of this vestigial way of conceiving, organizing this political party as another spoils of war party and doing the one thing we've never done, not in my lifetime, advance conservative reform and conservative reformers the way that Mitch Daniels turned around Indiana and Scott Walker turned around Wisconsin. If we don't do that, we're not going to have a party after Tuesday.
I wanted Mitch Daniels to come here. Remember, he showed up on WLS. We did interviews with him. You did too?
Yeah.
And
when WLS was WLS. And, yeah, I like Mitch Daniels a lot.
Yeah, I know. I wanted him to scramble the Indiana National Guard, invade, and take over Illinois.
I want us annexed. I want to be annexed to Indiana. But the Custer thing, I think, illustrates how corrupt the establishment Republican Party is in Illinois. It's I don't know where it starts. It's got to start many years ago with Bill Cellini going to Springfield, amassing a fortune, dictating through his friends in the media and in pension investments and so forth, playing levers and always swimming or flying under the radar. Thompson was a Cellini guy. Edgar was a Cellini guy. On and on and on. And as a result, we get nothing except, I think, Jeff Carlin, that conservatives are constantly ridiculed. Not only by the establishment Republicans, but also by media in this town, and held to some sort of higher or different account, demeaned, mocked, laughed at. And they, what do, Dan? Jeff? They just leave. They go to Arizona, Florida, right?
Well,
I mean, we lost 100,000 people. Guess what? They're not the millionaires.
Well, that's in part what's happening. There's no question about it. We've memorialized so many of these stories with our SaveYourHomeNow.org campaign. I mean, hundreds of vignettes from all over the state of people who have left or are in the process of executing their exit strategy. Though the one thing I would say, just in terms of a hopeful note, to try and look for hopeful notes, Jeannie Ives, her primary challenge against Bruce Rahner. I mean, against a guy who was the incumbent governor, $100 million in branding behind him, outspent 10, 15 to 1 in the primary. She came within 18,000 votes, being one of 118 state reps starting that campaign, a four-month campaign. That is a long path to travel in a very short period of time against enormous odds. I mean, how enormous were those odds for her to take out Rahner? It's happened three times in this country in the last 100 years that an incumbent governor has been taken out in his or her party's primary. It hasn't happened in the country in more than 40 years since Dan Walker got taken out in a Democrat primary. So it is.
Yeah, but there was a daily then.
Well, I understand, but that's even my point. It's to say it's exceedingly rare, and for Ives to come as close as she did, given those odds,
says close was it
18,000 votes, 51-49 race percentage wise. It says something about this revolution that's bubbling just below the surface. That if you have Jeannie Ives and people like her to give form to it, then perhaps you can flip the script on the Democrats and the surrender Republicans faster than we think.
Why do you think that Illinois kind of gets overlooked on the national Republican level? I mean, I don't feel like the focus was in Rauner was anywhere. I mean, now he distanced himself from the president. That's probably hurt him. But everyone's talking about Atlanta or Georgia or Florida, Arizona. I mean, Illinois seems like a nothing to outside of Illinois.
Well, it's the money goes where the competition exists. And so because Rauner is, not close, the Republican Governors Association is not spending money here where they're going to spend money where the races are hyper-competitive, like Georgia, like Florida. Same thing goes for the NRSC, National Republican Congressional Committee, as well. And so you do have money pouring into Roskam and Hultgren. You do have the president coming to Southern Illinois to stump for Mike Bost for that congressional seat. So it's just a function of highest best use of limited resources and time. And so that's why you don't see national attention or help for Rauner, but you do for some of the congressional races here.
One thing that happened in this election cycle, and it got the wrong kind of commentary, and I think by people who don't really understand the dynamics, Kanye West and Chance, the rapper, are coming onto the scene politically in Illinois around the time, right after Rahm Emanuel pushed, and Rauner pushed a sanctuary cities approach. Rahm even wanted the ID.
Yeah, city ID.
City ID.
Yeah, that you could use to register to vote, even though you're in this country illegally.
And I noticed that there was a hostility among African Americans to this. And I think part of the reason is the usual immigrant group, or they're not immigrant groups, they're forced immigrants, but groups, minority groups, demographic groups, competing with each other. But I've noticed also that the Republicans, with all this going on, have not been able to capitalize on this.
They're right.
Why is that? Why haven't they?
Because the Republican leadership, the people, I shouldn't say leadership, I should say the people with leadership titles in the Republican Party, because they're not leaders, are cowered by the bigot baiting, which is all the left does. They're afraid of it. Jeannie Ives stood with Alderman Napolitano to oppose the city ID back in the primary. So that's city and state working together around an issue. They may not share the same politics exactly, but they share the same perspective on that issue. And a half a dozen aldermen also opposed it, Spezzato and a couple of others.
Right, but I'm talking about
driving the
wedge.
But the Republican Party went too because they're afraid that somebody's going to call them a racist.
What's racist about it?
There's nothing racist about it. It's about law and order. You know what's
no,
racist?
No. I don't mean what Trump is doing now and the whole caravan.
No, I'm talking
invasion.
About the city ID.
I'm talking about there was a. I think I've told you both this. I was covering a homicide on the West Side, and a guy, one of the witnesses, said, "I have to go now. I really can't talk. I've got to be at work at 3 o'clock." Black guy, and I'm like, "Wait a minute, 3 o'clock." It's 11 o'clock. And the guy said, I got to take 3 buses and a train. I'm the last black man in my factory in Elgin. And I know anecdotal evidence sucks, okay? Data is important. But I remember that. It just struck me. And then I see Maze Jackson, others on other African Americans complaining about the attention that Democrats are paying to Latinos at their expense, they believe. And I wonder why Republicans can't use it. Don't see the opportunity there.
Well, we could.
Particularly conservatives.
We could. I mean, it's real simple. I mean, somebody who's here illegally who votes takes away the vote of a Latino, a black person, but other Americans that have the same ethnic or racial makeup. I mean, it's like this is, The amazing thing to me, John, is how many 30 and 40 and 50 and 60-year-olds we have roaming around that don't know what you and I learned in second grade. We literally have to have grade school level conversations with people about things like fairness, the rule of law, respect for other people, how you're supposed to, the golden rule. I mean, like these are like wonderful insights when politicians comment after a tragic
as
event.
If it's new.
Yeah, right. Like oh now I understand. Right. I'm not supposed to, you know, speak ill of people just because they're different than me. Oh, thank you so much,
Mr. Congressman.
Yeah,
thanks, Don Lemon.
This is insane. So if we can't get out of that. I'm talking about elevating our conversation. We talk about it in terms of civility. I talk about it in terms of intellectual content. If we can't get beyond that basic, like, keep your hands to yourself type conversation, then, I don't know where this goes. But yeah, there's opportunity.
It goes only to force.
Well, but if the opportunities, too, is for, I mean, with due respect to Mays, who's a friend, and some of these other people, is, you know, what's in it for black people is not helpful either, which is his mantra. The idea that there's going to be here are the candidates for black people for mayor, and here are the candidates for Latino people for mayor, and here are the candidates for the Irish for mayor, and here's the one Greek guy for. I mean, all
but
that.
She is Irish.
Well,
Susana Mendoza or Susana O. Mendoza, by the way.
Yeah. Well,
right? Come on.
Right. But that's how. So we need to get beyond and unify and the racial division and the discord, and we need to harmonize. And then we go into immediately right to the balkanization in terms of sizing up candidates for mayor.
I got you.
I mean, a world, this state, this city is an irony-free zone. Irony-free zone. You're saying one thing and you're doing 180 degrees the opposite, and you're wondering why you can't get to the thing you said you want to see happen. It's just so exasperating. Honestly, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I really don't. The Republican Party, Democrat Party, it's all just this warlordocracy of kleptocrats. And so until you have people that want to present a completely different vision and call people on the carpet who may be well-intended, but they're touting the same nonsense that's been touted or actually implemented for generations. It's like Amara Enya, the woman who's being backed by Chance the Rapper and Kanye. Kanye's given her $200,000 and Chance endorsed her with sort of the promise of money, vague promise of money. So, and, you know, she's we had her on my show. She's a very personable, young activist in the Austin neighborhood and all that. But she's talking, you know, transaction tax on LaSalle Street. She wants financial services
Ocasio
to go away.
Cortez,
she wants
of Chicago.
Commuter tax, because apparently she doesn't understand how important tourism is in Chicago.
How about commuters who actually work here?
That too.
That's good for Elk Grove Village. You put a commuter tax on Chicago.
Also, by the way, commuter tax, and you're for the downtrodden. Right. That's called a regressive tax. Yeah. I don't know how to break this to you. Yeah. I mean, a city bank, a public bank.
Oh.
You want city government to run a bank?
That was Pawar, right?
No, that's Amara Enya.
Yeah, and also Pawar.
Well,
I think
sure.
He's running
Pawar's
for treasurer
now. Pawar's another dingbat. Right. I mean, so it's like, look.
If you put your money in and I put my money in, we share it, Jeff Carlin. And Jeff Carlin needs a loan, right?
Yeah. And
Ponzi schemes.
And we don't have to worry about the pesky bottom line. Yeah, exactly. You know why banks have low default rates? Because they worry about the pesky bottom line. Right. You know why this city is in default as a corporation? Because it is not bottom line sensitive. I mean, it's like you want to enlist people like her because they're trying to break the paradigm, but they're only breaking it in terms of sort of the visual appeal. They're not breaking it in terms of substantive policy, and you have to connect the dots.
She is attractive because she breaks away from Preckwinkle. If you think in terms of tribal, and I don't mean tribal like blacks.
Generational.
I don't think like Don Lemon.
It's generational.
Generational, and also
attitude.
She takes away black votes from Preckwinkle, and therefore others are paying notice to her, right?
Well, I mean, I think the celebrity that's attached.
And celebrity and all
is
that.
A big part of it, for sure. Right.
But that doesn't help us get, that doesn't help the city one whit, right? It doesn't.
What she's proposing to do? No, it would be, you know, you would just hasten the, you know, the cataclysm. Obviously, these are terrible public policies if you are rich in economic growth. And you would think that somebody who's a member of the Austin Chamber of Commerce, you know, would be a little bit more sensitive to, I don't know, commerce?
All right, then. All right, guys. Let's, you know, after Tuesday election, Rauner will leave for, most likely leave for the Dalmatian coast, I think, right, with his wife.
Yeah.
And why stay here, right? Why stay? I don't despise him as much as you do.
He's a party builder, though. I thought he was going to stay, maybe continue to invest in the party.
And we'll see what happens.
Candidates in the upcoming municipal races.
We'll see what happens to Roskam. And
I thought we were in irony-free zone.
Yeah, well, we are. Exactly.
But what happens in the that happens Tuesday as the polls close, the Chicago mayoral race begins in earnest.
Yeah.
What say you on this? Where do you see this happening?
I think it's a complete jump ball. I mean, I think anybody who says it's going to be these two candidates in the runoff or this is the overwhelming favorite doesn't know what they're talking about. I have no idea. I think you can make a case for probably four or five candidates, and maybe we're not even done yet. I mean, it's you don't have to file until November 26th. Well, we're not done yet because Susana Mendoza is going to get in after Tuesday to be Madigan's candidate, and she has to win her comptroller's reelection on Tuesday first. So, Mendoza, because it's not because these people are going to signal a change in the approach to public policy making in Chicago or enhance the fortunes of Chicago. None of them will. But in terms of who's backing them, Preckwinkle,
public sector worker,
Fredo Daly,
he's not Fredo. The mayor was Fredo.
I think Richie was getting a bad rap after seeing Billy.
Because he's for term limits and ethics.
finally, somebody's for term limits and ethics. So, Daly, Preckwinkle, Mendoza. I think Vallis is in that mix for sure. Right. And then, I think there's probably two or three that could shoot the gap and be interesting when you're talking about a race to 20% or a bunch of candidates.
Dorothy Brown and the Goats. You forgot to mention her. She made a fortune on the non-existent meat of goats.
Yeah.
And the feds are looking at her, and she's still running because she stacks her office with patronage for churches on the west and south sides. Is that cynical of me, John?
Is there anybody at 219 South Dearborn? Because how long have the feds been looking at Dorothy Brown?
They should be looking at those toilets for Pritzker, too.
Yeah.
That's an obvious. I mean, even the inspector general called it a fraud. Right? If I'm not mistaken, the Inspector General's report said it was tax fraud. But yeah, Dorothy Brown?
She's been under federal investigation since I was, sleeping on a carpet square in the afternoons. And so, so whatever. Yeah, Dorothy Brown, right. Willie Wilson, Amara Enya, half a dozen other people. But
why is Susana Mendoza getting the buzz? I just did David Plyer's show, is the podcaster here, and he said, what about Susana Mendoza, because she's not even in yet. And I know David knows what he's talking about, but he was just baiting me on this, so we talked about it. And I wonder with you, Dan, why do people not, is it that the journalists don't want to make the connection between Susana Mendoza and Mike Madigan? They want a fresh face who can play soccer, and I like her as a personality. I do.
Oh, I'm sure she's wonderful,
but soccer player than she is.
Yeah, I know.
Right, but yeah. I wonder why there almost seems to be a reticence of talking about the donations she gets that are controlled by Madigan from labor, etc., from these PACs. It's like almost like, hey, they're two separate creatures, and they're not.
Right. I mean, flying off of her dizzying career as the city clerk, right?
Are you talking about that gang thing?
She revolutionized the city sticker. it's so important. And state representative, when she was a state rep, she was a roll call vote for Mike Madigan, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So she's a roll call vote for Mike Madigan, the General Assembly, and she's a city clerk who does a city contest to redesign the sticker. And now she's the comptroller, handpicked to be the comptroller.
Mm-hmm. But they don't make, I don't see, when I see
it. Because they want a Latino candidate. They got to have a Latino candidate for,
But shouldn't journalism be expected to say Mendoza, Madigan's candidate? Mendoza, comma.
They'll get to it, but the journalists talk about this the same way the Democrats do, because one is the comm shop for the other, which is to say, here's your Latina candidate, or Latina, because then you got Gary Chico, too, so maybe, but the, so here your
Gary Chico, comma, Burke.
Yeah, well, right. But we only look at the identity that's presented. We don't look at the relationships that exist.
Someone might accuse us of racism.
Right. So it's here are the Latino candidates that are competing to be the Latino candidate. Right. Here are the black candidates competing to be the black candidate, the Irish, and so forth. That's how we're going to talk about it, because we're ignorant.
And ignorantly so, we march on to the election. I want to ask Dan.
I tell you what, one thing, though, and we talked about this, too. I mean, you got this many candidates?
Dorothy Brown can be in the runoff.
Yeah, and also so could a center-right candidate. So could, you know, there could be an actual candidate that would expand the parameters of debate. And the Republican Party, you know, I know this is a nonpartisan race, hasn't put up a serious candidate for mayor, serious person for mayor, mm-hmm. since Don Hayter in 1987. And so this could be a real opportunity to try and at least establish a beachhead, at least get into the conversation in Chicago and stop pretending like this 3-million-person Hamlet doesn't exist, which is what the Illinois Republican Party has done for the better part of 30 years.
I know that you don't like talking about the racial tribal aspects of politics, but I would say that it still exists and it's important in terms of analysis. And
yeah, right.
So therefore, I see the business community having to make a decision very soon. Do they continue to play games from out of state and fund Bill Daley, or do they get behind Paul Vallis and realize if they're going to have any kind of economic coherence in among the candidates that are running, that they better get behind this guy?
I think maybe they would in a runoff, but I think in terms of the first cut, the primary in February—
Is Daley's money from out of town?
I think they're going to be with Daley.
Really?
I think they are. And I think it's sad. And I think that there's not enough coverage of the C-suite people in this city who run around to these events that I go to, but I have to sit at the back tables. Mm-hmm. I can't afford them. but I see them, and they're feted, and they're wonderful, and it's all great. And I'm all for philanthropy, and I appreciate that people give of the money that they've legitimately earned to help organizations and so forth.
Do you shave out there?
No. Even if it requires them getting a trophy or something in order to do so.
Father of the year.
Right. But here's the thing. You want journalism? Hold people to account that are underwriting the political class.
Yeah.
And I mean, not in the abstract unions, trial lawyers. I'm talking about naming names, profiling those names.
You're a newspaper man now.
That's what we're doing. We are naming names. We're naming names on both sides of it. The beneficiaries as well as the underwriters. And oftentimes the underwriters become also the beneficiaries. But we're doing all of it. And that's what the Chicago Press Corps, as pathetic and cowardly as it is, should
Hold
do more
it.
Of.
Come on now. I mean, every time I mention the Democratic media complex, I got people needing counselors where I work. Okay? So I don't think the Press Corps is as bad. You're a competitor now. You're a competitor. You're in the press business. So I don't think we're as bad as...
Oh, really?
You would want to say it. Yeah, really? I think there's some good reporting. I'm just
naming some. Oh, of course. Right. But I mean, but look.
Good political reporting. Bill Ruthart, Tim Novak. Let's.
I know. It's the same. Names. Yeah, right. Three names. Well, keep going.
What do you want me to put my name out there? Yeah, I will.
No, I would put your name out there. Okay, so
I don't think I'm like
three.
In the tank for something.
Try and get to six.
I think you conflate. You're starting to be like one of those Democrats on the CNN panels where you conflate everything.
I'm not conflating.
Yes, you are.
Look, I mean, what's the D to R distribution in the Chicago Press Corps? What's the Democrat to Republican distribution of the Chicago Press Corps, a ratio? What do you think?
I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
I know, because we're doing another story on it, which we've done previously. And I think
I did vote for Glenn Pritchard, so does that count me out?
Well, that's
does
in
that
a
make me a
that's,
Democrat?
That's in a general. I wouldn't have known that if you not had
I
you
had
not told
say.
Me.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. But here's the thing. It's you know, basically 20 to 1 in terms of Republican, in terms
all
of Democrat.
All 20 of them and me and it's 22.
No, the ratio of 20 to 1 in terms of not just individuals, but in terms of total votes cast in Democrat primaries versus Republicans. So my question always just goes back to forget the personalities and names.
Yeah.
if you had 20-1 Republican to Democrat primary ballot voters
be the same.
In the media, would the coverage be the same? Would the story selection be the same? Would the way the stories are covered, the angle of the stories be the same? Obviously, it wouldn't be. And that's the point. And so if anybody would actually admit that, then we could have a conversation. If people would be transparent about their actual political interests and agendas at the papers, at the TV stations, then there, you know, I would be sort of less critical because, hey, they're open and notorious about it the same way I'm open and notorious about where I'm coming
notorious
from.
Notorious as opposed to infamous.
Well, yes, I mean, right? Open and well-known. Not necessarily with a negative connotation, although not necessarily not without a negative connotation.
That's Dan Proft, media critic. And I didn't even have to play any Don Lemon sound to wind him up on that.
We miss you in Chicago, Don. Come back.
Lemonizing. I had a reader call in or write in today, the other day. This is lemonizing. When it's defined as when you say don't demonize someone, and then you demonize a whole group of people.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, but I mean, that's not. Obama was great at that. The Democrats are great at this. They project onto others who they are.
Yeah.
Right? Their criticisms.
For Dan Proft, commentator, talk show host, political operative. Operative is the correct
word. I've been called worse.
What is the correct term for Dan Proft on the political side? Political activist, right?
I run a PAC.
Right.
Yeah.
For Jeff Carlin, who does not, but is a Blackhawk fan and very sad, and I think he had something of a hangover today because he went to Sabatino's, which you know is a hangout for when Mike Madigan wants to see Jimmy DeLeo. He does it there because there are no windows. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist, a lonely conservative in the liberal milk. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Chicago Wake.